Hey, everybody, welcome to Friday Filibuster. We've got a small, tidy crew, but it's a crew of originals in CW speak. So from the dawn of time, we've got Mac McIntyre, of course.
Hack-a-do.
And Michael Staley.
Hi-de-ho.
And that's the big boss, Michael Staley, as well. So we peeled him away from he said he got out of some rehearsal early, so we were able to snag him to kill some time.
Yep.
You know, as I'm here sitting thinking, Mac, how long have you been writing / editing for the site?
I've been writing since 2005, editing since about a year or two later.
Nice. Okay.
So since 2007, 2008.
Yeah, all right. I mean, we were just talking, Mike. I just thought time really flew.
Oh, quick. Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
We will be celebrating our 15th anniversary the first week of April.
That's pretty crazy.
And wow.
My 10th year went by in October, I think. So it's insane to think that. So, but so hopefully big things planned for the 15-year celebration, right, Michael? Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
All right. Okay. So we don't want to commit that thing. So anyway, right. Here we are. A little quick Friday filibuster. We'll get you into the weekend. So let's go right to you, Mac. I know we were scheduled to go see 300 Rise of the Empire. I did see it twice, in fact, so I will give you my review after. But were you able to – you have anything to report this past week?
The other night there was a power outage, and I thought to myself, well, I can either just sit here in the dark and freeze to death, or I can go out and do something. So I went out to the movie theater, and what was playing when I got there was 3 Days to Kill, starring Kevin Costner.
Okay, I want to hear how this went.
I should have stayed home and frozen to death.
Oh, no.
This movie just – it doesn't know what it wants to be. You know?
Okay.
Every 15 minutes it becomes a different movie. The setup is that Kevin Costner is like the world's greatest CIA agent, right? Or the world's greatest spy. Or I think he's a hired killer, but he works for the government. I don't know. He kills guys for the government, but he does it really sneakily. But he's retired now. But they bring him back in for one last job. But the setup is that he's also spending the weekend with his estranged teenage daughter.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So he's like, doing daddy-daughter stuff, and then he's constantly having to run off by himself to go kill bad guys.
And it's not Maggie Grace pretending to be 13, right?
No. it's Haley Steinfeld from True Grit.
Okay.
That premise, that's actually an amusing premise. They could have some fun with that. But instead of being fun and being sort of, you know, comedic and playing around with sort of the double life and everything, the movie's just really serious. And it takes itself really, really seriously. And we see things like the daughter's breaking down in tears because daddy never bought her a bike when she was little. And then he goes from that to, like, torturing a guy in a bathroom. And then, you know, there's also a relationship with him and the ex-wife, and it's just really glum, really serious.
Not fun.
Costner, I don't hate Costner, but he didn't quite sell me on being the world's greatest spy.
And didn't you think, like, when I first heard about this movie, I thought there was some potential here to capture some of that Taken magic, where you don't really consider Liam Neeson a badass, and then he surprises you, and he's like, oh, that makes sense. But I thought Costner could kind of make sense. You know?
They were definitely going for that with the action scenes. They were trying to do a Taken thing with some of those really just, you know, hard, fast fights that are over in a couple of seconds, you know, because he's just that cool. But I don't know. Costner, again, I don't hate him, but he doesn't really have Liam Neeson's swagger.
Yeah, well.
So, also, 2.5 hours, the movie was way too long.
Yeah,
too much.
It just dragged. It just went on and on and on.
I don't know about you guys, but like as I've advanced in years and I've been exposed to ungodly amounts of movies over the course of my tenure that are ungodly themselves. I mean, to me it's just like I'm weighing a lot of like, is the movie accomplishing what it's obviously setting out to do, and is it doing it in an efficient way? You know, I mean, that's kind of where I'm coming down with a lot of stuff. Like, is a movie, like, you know, is it? Is it just like – is it setting out to do what it wanted to do, and is it not wasting your time doing it, I suppose, just to be kind of callous?
The sad thing about the movie industry right now is it's the bottom line.
Right.
The studios are only greenlighting projects that they know are going to make money. So that becomes the driving force for everything. So you lose a lot of the artistic merit. Now, that's not to say these things aren't happening, because you got people who can sell their films directly to Netflix. In fact, Bill Hunt, who's the editor of Digital Bits, was posting on Facebook today, a friend of ours, that Ridley Scott's DVD producer, Charlie De La Zorica, has created his own film. And he has been behind the camera and doing all sorts of stuff for a long time. Recording, you know, bonus features and everything. But he's finally done his own little action thriller, and they're all ecstatic about it, because here's a guy who knows the industry inside and out and can go and make a small film without having to worry about, you know, getting studio approval or anything like that on your own dime.
Or if you're Wally Pfister, right?
Right.
I mean, that was a trailer that played in front of 300, his Transcendence movie. So, I mean, if you're scoring Johnny Depp and you're getting that kind of funding. But, I mean, Pfister's no, like, I mean, I'm looking forward to it, because the guy's a wizard, right, as far as cinematography. So we'll see how he is a filmmaker. But it's not like he was a small name. I mean, he's kind of as good as it gets as far as cinematography goes, right?
Yeah. So. Well, and then we know that a lot of these guys are going into television because they can do that kind of stuff without having to worry about studio filmmaking. So.
Well, I mean, we've been watching, and this is kind of usurping you here, your turn here, Mac, but Carrie and I have been watching True Detective, the HBO series, which, I mean, you've got two legit Hollywood stars fronting that, you know, McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. So, I mean, is TV grabbing more of these talents, right?
And it's just for the season, yes, so once they go to
season two.
Yeah.
Although then you have someone like Kevin Spacey who's doing House of Cards, right?
Right.
That's,
so it's the material. It seems like it.
It seems like it more and more now. So,
and we can go to this small British format where there's 8, 10, 12 episodes.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Which it's good. Like, I like it. I mean, I don't want necessarily 22 episodes, dragged out or something. I don't mind that. I mean, in HBO, so they give you news. You know, so right after True Detective, you get a couple weeks of new Game of Thrones, right? And after that, this and this. So, as long as you keep the quality coming. That's pretty good, and so I don't know. Anything else, Mac?
That's it. Just you're not missing much.
Yeah. All right, that's a shame. Michael, how about you?
Between rehearsals, I'm rehearsing for two shows right now, and I have three auditions because we're into summer stock season. So you're auditioning for all the summer shows, and I've never done summer stock theater before. I've always been very busy. Did you?
Yes.
What did you do?
It's two plays that you never heard of. It was the director wrote them himself, but it was fun.
Yeah, in all my years, I've never done summer theater, so I auditioned for Arsenic and Old Lace, Music Man, and Spamalot, which was the one that I was really going out for.
Is Spamalot the one in the park?
No, they're doing Shrek in the park.
Shrek in the park, that's right.
Which is what we did last fall.
That's right. I remember you telling me about that. And you thought that would be fun, like, to take the kids to, maybe, right?
Oh, it's going to be a blast. Yeah. I mean, it's an absolute show, and Bridget will adore it. She will never stop singing those songs.
Yeah,
maybe you'll get her to stop singing about Frozen for a while.
I've had to wean her off of that, but I'm going to take that recommendation, because I think that would be a fun thing to do, sure.
So what I did was I went back and watched Holy Grail. And then watched – somebody went into the Broadway theater in the original run of Spamalot with a handheld camcorder and put it up on YouTube. Huh. So you can actually watch the show.
Okay. Right.
And I saw it. I saw the original cast before they even went to Broadway, because they previewed in Chicago. And it's just a hell of a lot of fun. The stuff holds up. The jokes hold up. It's just – and YouTube, my copy of Holy Grail is boxed up somewhere at my parents' from when I moved from L.A. But there's an entire – version of Holy Grail on YouTube. I don't know how they get away with this stuff.
There's a lot of that. I mean, there's a lot. You can watch almost any movie on YouTube, I found. So don't ask me, but you name it, you could probably find it. So.
And PS3 now has a YouTube app, so I was able to watch it on
the
TV. Yeah.
That's right. You sit through like a 15-second ad for Buick. And then
exactly.
Yep. Very good. Nothing nearly as accomplished as what you have going on for you, Mike. So before I get into 300 quick TV stuff, True Detective, we're two episodes in. We're playing catch-up. The finale aired already. But it really is pretty fascinating. Probably the most atmospheric TV show I've seen. I mean, it's just really deep South Louisiana, and it's just fascinating. And then you're going to get top-notch performances of Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey. So, and it is just like – it makes a difference to add that kind of quality star power to a show, you know?
Yeah.
And, but it's pretty cool. So just two episodes into it. And on the other side of the premium channel spectrum, Banshee is wrapping up. It's finale. So I will say I still love the show, but not as awesome as the first season. Just like this Strike Back season wasn't as awesome as the second one. But and that is my Cinemax TV series report for today.
I finished up the first season
of Banshee. What, Banshee?
Yeah. It
was and what do you great. Think?
It was great. I liked it.
Was it, right? Is it like pulp bliss? It's like just B-movie pulp bliss. And,
the best was the episode where Hood was fighting the MMA
fighter.
Absolutely. They just beat the crap out of each other.
To me, Mac, when that happens, when that episode, I was like, okay, this show's going for it, right? I mean, it's quick. We'll tell you, Mike. So the premise of Banshee is this criminal gets out of serving 15 years, shows up in a small town to chase his ex-girlfriend. Some circumstances happen. He ends up assuming the identity of the new sheriff. So it's this crazy premise. But what that means is he's pretty much – the writers have carte blanche to make him the most badass sheriff in history. Right, Mac? I mean, he could do pretty much whatever he does. And there's an MMA fighter who rapes a girl, and he goes in there, and they settle it, and they just beat the tar out of each other. Like, it's brutal. God. It is a brutal fight, and, like, the deputies are just kind of staring at him. You know, it's great. And how about the prison flashback episode, Mac? That was pretty cool, too, huh?
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, so good. I'm glad. It's good stuff, Banshee. But anyway, 300. Speaking of over-stylized craziness, I have to say I really liked it. I saw it twice. Really got a kick out of it. This is kind of going back to my point about a movie that knows what it wants to be, right? And this movie is just – it wants to be just kind of like full-on red meat, you know, ultra over-the-top violent, crazy, you know, action pretty much. You know, it's – I mean, there's no speeches. There's a few kind of pep-em-up talks, right? But even compared to the first 300 where, you know, there was like they're addressing the – There's some Oracle consultation and blah, 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 and there's like a little slow build. This thing is out of the gate, crazy, tons of action. And it's actually, I think, more clever than you think it would be because it actually runs parallel to the events of the first movie. So while the Spartans are off making their stand, meanwhile, the Athenian Navy, because the whole thing, like all the action takes place on the sea for this film.
Okay.
So the Athenian Navy is taking on the Persians on the sea. So there's these huge sea battles. Some turn into, like, these great melee encounters, but everything's kind of parallel. So, like, Themistocles, who is actually played by Sullivan Stapleton from Strike Back, he'll go to Sparta while Leonidas is off, you know, talking to the Oracle, right? And then he comes back, and then he hears news about the Spartans dying. So everything is actually sneaky clever. So it's not like a prequel. It's not like a sequel. It runs parallel to the events. So it almost feels like one part of a whole, you know, and the style going along with it really works to that effect. And then just the action, it's hugely satisfying. It's so – you have to see it big and loud. It really is just a visceral experience because it's so loud. And they just go for it. So I had a great time with it. Took my dad to see it the second time. He loved it. So I don't know what that tells you, but I just if you like the first one, you'll like this one, and it does enough different things to, like, you know, make it, you know, that much more, you know, because you got to be a little cooler with the second one. So it's my jam. I'll just put it that way.
If you put the two movies side to side, do the aesthetics match up?
The aesthetics match up absolutely. I mean, Snyder produced and wrote it. I can't remember the director, but, you know, it's obviously this. Like, it really feels like – it's been, what, like 7 years since the first one, something like
that. Long time,
right?
Yeah.
Which kind of surprised me. But it – like, they bring back Rodrigo whatever Santoro. As Xerxes. He looks the same.
Okay.
You know, Lena Headey there, she looks the same. They even got David Wenham back, you know. Oh. So there's a lot – there's obviously, they couldn't afford Gerard Butler. And that's – I mean
– Yeah.
So, the new guy doesn't have that presence that Butler does, that kind of, like, animalistic presence. But he does his best, and he does a good job. But they just really kind of wove it in, so it seemed to make sense. But, yeah, stylistically, a lot of blood, the slow motion stuff, everything. It just really feels like an extension of the first movie. They both feel like they belong in the same universe. It's just nicely done, I'd say. So it's not high art, but it's just it's a raucous good time with a few seeds of history thrown in. And I was telling a coworker of mine who loves this history stuff. I said, look, you're not going to get a history lesson here, but there's enough – Like, Themistocles is a real guy, and this battle was real. So maybe, you know, some dopey 19-year-old will crack his book for history class.
Did they have to put a disclaimer in front of this?
Yeah, I know. No, thankfully. Oh, goodness gracious. Although I will say, Noah still continues to intrigue me, so we'll see what happens.
Well, they're projecting it. It's going to make big money.
Everybody's talking about Noah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you would think at the very least the controversy will spur attendance.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah, so I'm definitely still looking forward to that. And then we've got – I mean, you know, Mac, this, we were talking about this after RoboCop, but, like, this month is pretty jam-packed. I mean, I would – like, Nonstop is something I wanted to see, speaking of Liam Neeson. You know, that's a movie I've wanted to see. So we had 300. Veronica Mars is this weekend.
Yes.
Yeah, so my wife and I are trying to carve out some time to do that. We got The Raid 2 coming in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I have to try to. I mean, that might be playing with 100 miles from us. So, and then Noah to wrap it up.
Captain America: Winter Soldier, the first week.
That's right. I mean, this is like
Divergent as well.
Divergent.
That's right.
This is like a summer slate. It seems come early. You know?
It's March has become mini summer.
It has.
There's always big blockbusters in March.
Yeah, it has been. So I don't know. I'm not sure what the Hollywood people see, but it's they're making money. So.
Well, they opened Die Hard on Valentine's Day, didn't they? Last year.
When did we see that? That was February, right? Yeah, that was.
Yep. It was January, February, sometime. Yeah.
Yep.
Although part of me wonders if they didn't trust its earning potential and was it kind of, you know, shifted to the doldrums. But
yeah,
even though we liked it, it's, you know, it's definitely, it wasn't regarded as a great movie. But so I know, good stuff. Really, if you do see it though, just find a big theater with loud sound to see it, because that is honestly part of the. I mean, it's just such an experience. You know, I mean, it's so loud. The percussion, it's like the guy who worked with Hans Zimmer to do the Man of Steel score, you know, that percussion. It's like this is his first gig by himself, and it is this, it's the most aggressive driving score I've ever heard. Like, I downloaded 5 songs, and I just put it on loop when I need to get work done, you know, at the office.
Wow.
Yeah, so I don't recommend it, and that's just, you know, just as a Red Meat-a-thon. But, all right, the stuff we got coming for the site, Mac, anything of interest?
Let's see. What haven't I talked about? Stuff for the site. Well, just last night I finished up my review of Teen Titans Go from Cartoon Network. This is where they take the Teen Titan characters and they do them in, like, really, really super cutesy style, like what the anime fans call chibi.
Chibi.
I was expecting this just to be awful. I'm like, oh, okay, it's kitty crap. But it was actually kind of great. You can tell that the writers are really big fans of the old Warner Brothers Looney Tunes. It's because this new Teen Titans is a lot like the classic Looney Tunes. Not as good as, but it really wears its inspiration on its sleeve. So just it's comedy, just simple gag cartoons, just kind of that sort of anything goes comedy. But somewhere there's, you know, that weird alchemy. It kind of worked, you know, with comedy. You know, sometimes you just have to sit down and say, okay, did you laugh? And the answer is yes, I laughed a lot. It was actually really funny. So there you go. There's a surprise.
All right. Good. Michael, you been able to sneak anything?
No, I'm so far behind. It's absolutely pathetic. I've got Sherlock Season 3 here that's half written, and I have to finish that up. And then I've got the two. I went out and bought Doctor Who Day of the Doctor, which is the 50th anniversary special, because BBC did not send it to us. And then they just sent over Time of the Doctor, which was the Christmas special, which after watching it again had me in tears, which is so ridiculous. So I've got those three BBC titles I need to write up.
All right. Well, look for those soon.
Yeah.
We'll put the word soon on it. See, working on about 3/4 of the way done my Venture Brothers Season 5 review. So,
what did you think of that season?
I liked it. I think I've come to terms with a few things. Like, I've had a conversation with myself about this. I think it's like Sergeant Hatred still kind of blows, but I think I think they're limited. I mean, on the commentary, Jackson Public and Doc Hammer are saying, like, they're getting Patrick Warburton to do his dialogue over the phone sometimes. So
really?
So I just think they're just limited. That's why, you know, Brock Sampson. I mean, so I'm still not a huge Sergeant Hatred fan, but he's grown a little bit on me because his personality's kind of shifted more into the exasperated haplessness, which is good. Hank still is fun. Dean's little, you know, Dean's kind of goth stuff.
Yeah, his
emo thing is hit and miss. But, like, to me, it's just, it's still, even, like, I think I liked it more than the season before, which I thought had gotten to a slow start and then kind of right of the ship. Okay.
Yeah.
This one, you know, I wouldn't say like it was, you know, uproarious as other episodes, but it was pretty even. I thought it was creative the whole way through. And they're just always doing some cool subversive things. And the show has always been more like clever, you know, and esoteric than just outright hilarious. And I think they got a lot of that in there. So I don't know. I like the season a lot. It's my roundabout way of saying it. I wish there was more Dr. Orpheus, but,
We haven't seen him much anymore.
But I think these guys just, I think Public and Hammer, they mix things up to keep them re-energized. And, you know, the show remains fresh, even if, you know, some choices you don't love and, you know, Henchman 24 gets killed off and blah, blah, blah. But, I did like the season a lot. It's a big hit around here.
My biggest frustration was that just as they started to get going, it ended.
Yeah, I agree with that. It did seem it was very abrupt. And the finale didn't feel like a finale.
No, not at all.
So, yeah, that's a good term. You know, I'm going to steal that and put it in my review because you articulated a good point. Because that's true. It didn't feel as complete. So,
And I kept looking online and searching to see, was this the first half of a longer season?
Right, right.
You know, they talked about doing another one after this, and I'm like, guys, it's you know, there's got to be more to this.
Yeah, there was no connective tissue that kind of felt like it felt like a series of one-offs,
yeah.
You know. But taken by themselves, the episodes were pretty satisfying. My favorite being when Dr. Venture gets that huge government project to develop that shield or whatever, and it ends up like mutating one group of college interns and it turns into this huge struggle.
Thing, yeah.
And that was just like classic Venture Brothers. So I think that's a good point. That's a good.
What else are these guys working on that they don't have time?
I don't know. And they poke fun at themselves again on their commentary. They'll say, okay, we'll see you in another 6 years or something. I think they're two brilliant artist guys, right, who just need that inspiration or something, you know?
Yeah.
Need that kick in the tail because, I mean, that's just how it is. I think the Venture Brothers are just unlike anything else on TV.
It's true.
I don't know. So, still liked it. It's been a while since I've looked at some of my older. I feel like I need to go watch some older seasons, but
they only have season one on Netflix.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's strange.
I do. I've got all of them on home video. Like I've got the last three on Blu-ray and the first two on DVD. So I'd love to just kind of revisit them. But yeah. But I agree with that take. Also, I can't remember if I talked about this last week. Did I talk about the Van Damme movie that I watched?
No, the one that I sent you with the picture of him and the knife
that
cover.
Did I ask for that, or did you send it to me?
I think I may have sent that one to you.
Well, God bless you, sir.
Really?
That movie. Okay, the movie's called Enemies Closer. So, lame Steven Seagal direct-to-video name, right? And Van Damme.
Yeah.
So when I saw it on the product list, I didn't have high hopes for it. That movie is great.
Really? Is that the one where Van Damme plays the villain?
Yes. Let me endorse this movie in the strongest. Like, if you trust any of my – if your taste sort of aligns with me, if you kind of like any of the stuff I like, please track down this movie. For one thing, like, it's directed by the guy who did Sudden Death and Time Cop, okay?
Nice. Hyams, is that it?
Hyams. That Pierre Hyams is in it. Van Damme – okay, so Tom Everett Scott is in this as, like, a park ranger. And he's forced to help these drug mercenaries find their cocaine that got lost on a plane crash. So then you've got a cross between Firestorm and Cliffhanger, right? So, like, which is more than any of us deserve on this world. So, you know, Tom Everett Scott plays the park ranger, who's actually pretty good as an action hero. Orlando Jones plays another character who's pretty he's a cool character as well. But the winner is Van Damme as this main bad guy. He's a vegan. He's like an environmentalist. He cracks jokes all the time. He talks about, you know, they need to go find these drugs, and they've got to cross this wilderness. They've got these horses that they stole from some Canadian Mounties. And even though they said, let's take the ATVs, they said, no, we'll take the horses because it's a lower carbon footprint. And he's dead serious about this. And he just makes these constantly self-effacing jokes. Like Tom Everett Scott at one point turns the tables on him and points a gun at him. You know, just does, you know, figure something out. And Van Damme's character says, you're great. That's my response to it. And then I'm going to ruin the last line of dialogue. That's it. I'll let you discover the movie. The last line of dialogue, Van Damme looks out And just before he meets his aunt, and he says, "Gasoline, it ruins everything."
God.
The strongest possible endorsement I can give. Enemies closer. Thank you. All is forgiven, Michael. All the crowd, all the stonados and stonados, whatever.
Oh my God.
Enemies closer is already got the inside track on biggest, best gem of the year.
Well, and now you've got Welcome to the Jungle.
I do have that. So I will go in thinking a little, hoping for a little more. But, Van Damme's character is even more outlandish than his Expendables 2 character.
All right. Well, let me name drop for a second, because you guys know that Katie Sackhoff used to be one of my neighbors back in L.A.
I didn't know that. Right, right.
So Van Damme, right after I left, moved into the neighborhood.
Oh, nice.
We would walk by, and we would go on, walk the neighborhood all the time, and there was this house that was being completely gutted and remodeled, and it turned out to be his. He put $6 million in this house. So all of these projects that he keeps doing, whether they're direct-to-video or, working for Stallone or whatever, are obviously paying off.
It is. I think he's been pretty shrewd with that. So,
yeah.
So he's a lot of fun. Yeah, so just please go see this movie. Find this movie. Secure it. It's probably going to be on Netflix at some point. So.
Yeah, my guess, or Redbox or something.
Redbox, yeah. Yeah, probably Redbox for sure, but well worth your time.
All righty.
All right. I don't know, I didn't see the update. We've got any updated?
No, I am so far behind. For those of you who don't know, we used to have an automatic code that would generate our upcoming releases calendar that would grab all the artwork from Amazon, and it was fantastic. Mike Jackson created. He was way ahead of his time, but this was written in 2002 code. Well, Amazon changed their API structure, which is their data mining structure, and broke everything.
Nice.
So I've been forced to have to do this by hand myself to repopulate this calendar, and I just have not had the time to do it.
On archaic architecture
God. So I apologize for all those who have now given up on us as an upcoming releases resource, and you can rest all the blame squarely on my shoulders.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what the dawn of the age of Aquarius.
Yes.
Okay, so let's just kind of skip ahead. How about we do a little impromptu ambush topic segment to wrap this up? Mac, do you have anything? What do you got?
Okay, ambush topic. First topic, in honor of 3 Days to Kill, what are some secret agents who have family lives outside of their secret agent work?
Good. First one that comes to mind. Oh, you go first.
I think we're going to do it the same thing. It's True Lies.
It is True Lies. That's
True
Lies.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
You got Elijah Dushku as his daughter and Jamie Lee Curtis as his wife.
Oddly enough, Elijah Dushku during her awkward pre-adolescent years, before she turned into the smoldering beauty, right?
Right.
So, but yeah, that's the classic one for sure. Yeah. I'm trying to think. See if I can come up with one. I want to say Stringfellow Hawk, but he has no family life because everyone's dead. His brother's in a Vietnam camp, so he doesn't count.
James Bond
had a wife briefly, and then she got off by Telly Savalas.
Yeah.
Secret 8. Where are other secret? Okay, I guess Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible 3, right? That was kind of the hook
He's
for that.
He's got the wife, yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of the hook for that movie, and they paid it off a little bit in the next one. And I thought that was pretty effective. So, yeah, the wife and, who is kind of the, gets captured by Philip Seymour Hoffman and whatnot. So, yeah, I'll go with that one.
Yeah. Let's see. I also had written down Jack Bauer in 24.
Of course, good one.
Oh, yeah.
I had written down The Taken, because that's obvious. We just talked about it. And Undercover Blues is a really funny movie.
I never saw that.
No, it's pretty good. Yeah.
But
the best. Yeah. The best, though, is definitely the early Fox Network show, The Adventures of Beans Baxter.
Oh, my God.
I've got nothing. I'm registering nothing.
Flash from the past.
Dude, you know, that means something to you, Mike? Because I don't know anything.
Just on the periphery. It was one of their earlier shows.
One of their – before they became the Fox Network
shows. Yeah.
So Beans Baxter is an ordinary teenager, learns his father was really a spy, and the villains from Ugly, which I guess is supposed to be like Uncle or something, Ugly kidnaps his dad. And so the government hires teenage Beans Baxter to take his dad's place in the spy agency. and so now, in between going to class and hanging out with his friends and pursuing the pretty girl, he's also going on missions overseas and having gadgets and gunfights and taking out bad guys.
Nice.
Well, would Scarecrow and Mrs. King fall into that category?
Great one. Oh, good one.
How did I not think about that?
Yeah.
I'm the go-to Scarecrow and Mrs. King resource for the site.
Right.
Yeah, Mrs. King, I still don't understand how she got the job. Like, we are promising our national security to this woman, and she's like, she has no discernible skills. I just don't understand how it worked out, you know?
But, it's just Beans was in the same position, so they should have done Mrs. King and Beans Baxter.
That'd be great.
Well, she was a Charlie's Angel in a previous life. That's why she got it.
Oh, was she? The girl
Kate
from
Jackson?
Scarecrow.
Kate Jackson?
From Scarecrow and Mrs. King?
Yeah.
I did not know that. All right. Yeah.
She was one of the original angels.
Fantastic. That makes sense. It's all coming together. All right. For me, fights, like hand-to-hand fights in midair while plummeting to the ground.
Ooh. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
Ooh.
Although they're probably bouncing from
They're bouncing, yeah. I think they're bad. It's not bad, though. We'll accept it unless something better occurs to you.
I know I've seen these before, but I'm trying to come up with a specific one. There's the big skydiving set piece in Point Break. Do they actually throw punches during that?
I think so. That's a good one. I would definitely accept that. That was in my thought process as well. So.
Yeah. That was the basis of a great Mythbusters episode where they recreated the skydiving from from Point Break. Yeah, they said that there is no way that Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze could have had a conversation while free falling.
Yeah, I can imagine.
They just could not hear a word that they were going through each other.
Yeah. And you know they're casting the reboot right now for Point Break.
I don't know if that would work.
I did see that. All right. That's great. A remake for Point Break?
Yeah.
I just don't. Man, they are out of ideas over there, aren't they?
Yep. The final big fight scene in Lopan's throne room or whatever in Big Trouble in Little China wasn't there as they would jump in the air. They would have like a sword fight.
I think that's good. Yes. That works. I like that. That was pretty good, actually.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, I love that scene.
Okay, I'm gonna give you Gandalf and the Balrog in Towers, the opening to that movie. They just kind of wail on each other as they plummet to the core of Middle Earth. And I think speaking of Bond, I think in one of the Roger Moore ones, he fights Jaws, and Jaws actually never deploys his parachute.
That's right.
And he falls
tent.
And he's right in the middle of the circus.
It may have been Moonraker. I don't know. Maybe it was the opening to Moonraker.
It was Moonraker. Yep.
Maybe it was the opening action scene to Moonraker. He parachutes down.
Right in the middle of the big top circus tent.
Yeah. Ouch.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, I know the one I was thinking of was Spider-Man and Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man 2 going down the side of the building.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's a good one. What is it with like Roger Moore James Bond movies, terrible Roger Moore Bond movies and big, you know, tents, big circus tents. You know, so everything, the horrible stuff is always in the circus tents.
Although I do have to say Octopussy is still one of my favorites.
It's got to be a guilty pleasure then.
It has to be.
Because there's nothing. But I can't say I wouldn't watch it if it was on TV.
Yeah.
If you're going to enjoy James Bond, you got to enjoy the campy stuff as
got
well.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to turn the channel if it's like The Man with the Golden Gun because I think that's kind of bold.
Bad. Yeah.
You know, but I'll watch. I watch Octopussy. I'll watch Moonraker every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Yeah.
I'll watch.
Well, I mean, just for the Learjet fight when they're fighting on top of the Learjet and he takes like the antenna to flick it in the guy's face.
I know. Again, though, just like the most incredible stunts ever. Kind of squandered in this campiness. I don't know why they do that, but
it's like 60s Batman, you know.
Oh yeah.
All
right. Well, why don't you wrap it up, Mike?
All right. Worst literary adaptations to film.
Now, literary or just like a book adaptation?
Well, any type of book.
So nothing like a classic. We're not talking classic.
It doesn't have to be. My particular one is a classic. But.
Okay. I can tell you the one that pissed me off the most.
What?
And I've said this before on this podcast, but the Bourne Identity.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
And the subsequent Bourne movies just, totally butchered Robert Ludlum. Like, everything. Butchered everything about it. They kept the characters' names, and that was it. So, I don't know. That's always irritating, because I love those books dearly. And they've just totally butchered them. Even though the movies themselves weren't bad, but it was just, that's what pissed me off. It wasn't like, oh, this movie sucks.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
Well, on our last show, you already heard me talk about the new Romeo and Juliet. Where they dumbed down all of Shakespeare's
That's pretty rough.
Writing. Yeah. Like two lines of poetry from Juliet they replaced with just her saying, oh, it's nothing.
Jeez. Can't think of something else. If anything else pops to mind, can't. That's a good one. This is a good one, but I'm sure there was other. Right. I mean, all we talk about is the movie's not as good as the book, right? That's all we hear. That's all we say. But now I can't. Yeah, I can't place my finger on it. So it's all right.
Well, you guys may have seen it later in the Mike Nelson years. They did a Hamlet.
Oh yeah.
Which was a 19, oh my God, I don't remember what year it was.
1960?
Yeah, made for German television, starring Maximilian Schell, who just recently passed away. He was, you know, the evil doctor in Disney's Black Hole. But the thing that made this so bad is the actor that was playing Claudius, you know, they dubbed it all in English. They used Ricardo Montalban.
No way.
To dub his language. He sounds like Khan. So it's just, you know, you cannot get over the fact that this is Ricardo Montalban voicing a German actor in a terrible, terrible production of Hamlet.
Oh, man.
But then there were a lot of terrible productions of Hamlet that were done. Mm. I mean, I think Kenneth Branagh's version is probably the most faithful and well executed, but a lot of that is terrible. Ethan Hawke did a version. Mel Gibson did a version.
That one's. Ethan Hawke's one is brutal.
Oh, here's a quick Shakespeare question. Like, Much Ado About Nothing, what's the superior one? Branagh's or Joss Whedon's?
Which one do you like the most? Joss Whedon's. I have to see that.
Yeah. I like both of them.
It's apples and oranges.
It is apples and oranges. I guess that's not fair. I just didn't know.
Because Branagh's is the more traditional, right. And Whedon's is the more contemporary.
Although, like, the star power in Branagh's is crazy.
Denzel Washington and
Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves is in that.
Emma Thompson, because they were married at the time.
Thompson.
That's right.
A young, Kate Beckinsale.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Michael Keaton, right?
Michael Keaton.
Yes.
Michael Keaton is awesome in that. What's his face from House? You know, the other doctor from House.
Oh, Hugh Laurie.
Wilson.
Yeah, Wilson. The guy plays Wilson. Robert Sean Leonard. So, yeah. Pretty epic. And Brian Blessed, I think.
Oh, my gosh.
Brian Blessed makes everything better.
He does. And with that we need to end our filibuster on that note. So why don't you put that in your pocket for tomorrow's, you know, or next week's end of the filibuster Mac quote.
Thank you.
Brian Blessed does indeed make everything better. So thank you, Michael, for pitching in. Thank you, Mac. This is it for this year's the Friday filibuster. We will see you next week, hopefully. The review of Veronica Mars. We'll see how that one shakes out. So, Mac, take it away.
This is Sparta.